This may come as a surprise to some of you. I enjoy spending my time in the company of sinners more than in the company of the righteous. Now, before any of you get up to run away, allow me a moment to explain. I think that it has something to do with my particular calling in ministry. And as I prepare for ordination to the priesthood next week, I've been reflecting a lot on my own sense of call and what that means as I progress forward in ministry and what that means about where I've come from. In the earliest days of my sense of call, I was probably in ninth grade when it started, but I couldn't articulate it then. I didn't understand it. I didn't really know what was happening. I acted out in a lot of ways, and you wouldn't look at me in the ninth grade and say, "Now that person's going to be a priest." But there was an itch in the back of my mind. There was an itch in my soul that needed scratching, and I didn't quite know what it was or how to scratch it. And as I grew in my life and as I went through high school, that sense of call grew stronger and more solid. And it was as if God was calling me to be a minister just to my circle of friends. And I was very frustrated by that as I began to understand what ministry was all about. I wanted to be doing something big. I wanted to be out in the world. I wanted to be saving everyone. God said, "No, minister to your circle of friends." I was kind of frustrated by that as I began to understand it. And I looked at my friends and I said, "Well, here's a group that certainly needs ministering to, but how do I do that, Lord?" And the answer that developed in me was not a ministry of preaching to them directly, as I'm doing now with you. It was not a ministry of reconciliation. I wasn't to go and lay hands on them. They probably would have thought that quite weird. It was certainly not a ministry of singing hymns. But it was a ministry of presence. It was a ministry of simply being with them and living out an everyday faith. And I didn't understand quite how that was going to work out. But it seems that it did. I got little affirmations from them over the years. Such comments as, "Well, that's Ryan. He's the group's God representative." I think that they took some comfort in the idea that they were associated with someone who was associated with God. That was about as close as most of them were willing to get. Our group was a group of people who had abandoned the faith of their childhood, who weren't particularly faithful Christians. There were some who went from time to time. Later on in the group, we met another friend of ours, and she was known as God Representative Number Two. But I really do think that they were comforted and glad of the fact that they were associated with someone who was associated with God. And as the years went on and we became juniors and seniors in high school, they exaggerated this to great proportions. And by way of example, let me share with you this story. We rode to high school in my friend Griffin's 1971 VW Bug. It was a light blue color, the morning sky color. And we fit five people into that Bug. I don't know how, but we did. And one particular morning as we're driving to school, Damien's sitting in the back seat cracking off-color joke after off-color joke, making fun of this and that, and really just being off base. And we were all laughing, and I probably even chuckled a couple times. When we pulled into the space at high school, and we opened up the doors and fell out of that car, Damien let loose with what was perhaps the most crude joke we had ever heard. We all laughed, and then Damien said, "You know, it's very probable that a hole to hell is going to open up right here, and we're all going to fall in it, and we're going to look up as we're falling and see Ryan going, 'Where'd y'all go?'" So like I said, they exaggerated my own sense of righteousness, if you will. But they were comfortable by that. And I saw their relationship with God bud a little bit. From time to time, I would have one of them with me in church. And they maybe came once or twice the whole time we were together in high school, but those one or two times really gave me great joy and great pride. I knew that something I was doing was working as I began to understand what a ministry of presence was all about. It's a ministry that takes time. It's a ministry of comfort. As they were comforted by being associated with one who was associated with God, so too can we be comforted by the words of today's Old Testament lesson so eloquently read. Last week we heard doom and gloom, destruction, death, foreboding and warning. This week we hear a sense of hope, a sense of good news. And those words of Baruch that we heard this morning, cast off your garments of sorrow and affliction, are powerful words, but they're even more powerful if we understand who Baruch is. Baruch was the scribe to Jeremiah. Jeremiah, the prophet of the destruction of Jerusalem. The prophet that breathed doom and gloom. The prophet that grew angry and argued with God. The prophet who said, I don't want to be a prophet. Everybody hates me and wants to kill me. But if I don't speak, it is as if a fire is welling up in my bones. Jeremiah was an unhappy sort of man, a disgruntled prophet, and a prophet who prophesied the fall of a city. But the vision that came to Jeremiah was a vision for the there and now, a vision that was fulfilled in that time. The vision that came to Baruch, his scribe, the one who actually penned the words that we read in Jeremiah, was a different vision. It was a vision of comfort, of hope, of mountains being leveled, of valleys being filled, of rough ways being made smooth. In other words, my friends, the playing field is leveled in the coming time. But not yet. Not yet. We still have some work to do. The gospel lesson introduces us this Advent season to John the Baptist, who elaborated on the themes of Baruch and said that the rough ways will be made smooth, the crooked ways will be made straight. He was the voice crying out in the wilderness. Now, what was that wilderness? That wilderness for John the Baptist was the wilderness around the area of Jerusalem and the Sea of Galilee. But that's not our wilderness. At least I don't think so, unless any one of you is particularly called to minister in the region of the Galilean Lake. So our task first is to discover what our wilderness is. Where do we need to go to make a highway for our God, a straight path? And for me, that wilderness was in ministering to my friends. That was how I learned of what that meant, what John the Baptist's cry was all about. See, like I said, I wanted to be doing something bigger, but God called me to something smaller that was in its own way a big deal. Too often we want to save the world. Too often we want to be all things to all people. And what John the Baptist has to say to us is that position has been filled. The position of Messiah, Savior of the world, Son of God, Jesus the Christ, is taken. And that is good news because that is hard work. John the Baptist alluded to this when he said, there is one coming after me, the thong of whose sandal I am unworthy to undo. That job is too difficult, too lofty, but we don't have to do it. It's been done for us. Our job, though, is the task of the Baptist. We do have to go into the wilderness, make straight the pathways for our God, prepare the hearts, minds, and souls of those whom we encounter for their encounter with the Holy One. So maybe now you understand a little bit better what I mean when I say that I enjoy spending time more often in the company of sinners than in the company of the righteous. Also because most likely they're not all that different from myself. I was thinking about this sermon this week as I was talking with a friend of mine who's still up in Chicago, and I was telling her about the softball team that I played on, and she laughed, and in her own sort of this way or that way of thinking, she said, "Well, is it a church league or is it a sinner's league?" I said, "I think you'd probably qualify it as a sinner's league." And I was thinking, that got me thinking about my softball team. Some of you know that I play on a softball team, and some of you probably know the story of that team. It's an interesting one, no doubt. When I first moved to Tampa this summer, one of my very first tasks I set for myself was to find some way to associate with some people that had absolutely no connection to St. Mark's. I worship here on Sunday morning and on Wednesday night. I work here during the week, and I live right there. I love this place, but I got to get out sometimes. And I love the game of softball, so I decided I would try to find a softball league. And I signed up as what they call a free agent, someone who doesn't have a team that's looking for a team. And I assumed that if I got placed on a team, I'd be fulfilling some empty position, and I didn't know what that might be. So I got the call, and it said that our first game was the following Monday. Please report to the field at 7:30. Your team's name is Forrest Gump. Fair enough. So I get to the field, I report to the captain, and much to my surprise, and much to the surprise of the entire team, we found out that we were a whole team made up of such free agents. Nobody knew each other. Nobody had played with each other before. We had no practice. We were in the fourth inning before we even knew each other's names. We were calling out to each other, "Great catch, shortstop." But we won that game, which was kind of neat. And afterwards, we decided that we would celebrate our team and celebrate our victory by enjoying a libation at a local establishment. While we were sitting around that table, the inevitable question was asked. And we went around the room answering that question. "So what is it exactly that you do?" And it came time for me to answer that question, and I've thought a lot about how I answer this question for the first time with a group of people who don't speak Episcopalian. Because if I were to say to them, "I'm a transitional deacon about to be ordained to the presbyterate," I probably wouldn't have gotten to play on the team again. So, yeah, right. So I simply said I'm an assistant pastor in a local congregation. And unlike a lot of people, this particular group of people didn't balk at that. In fact, some of them thought it was kind of neat that they had a minister playing on their team. Some people superstitiously thought it would bring them good luck. Probably others thought it would bring them bad luck. You never know. But once again, I found myself in the company of people who were glad to be associated with somebody who was associated with God. Our team went on to win every game in the regular season save one and eventually win the whole championship. It was kind of exciting. And we were celebrating our championship, our friendships, and our relationships, and the team at the same local establishment the night after we won, or the same evening that we won the championship. And that was when I learned what the real victory was that night. The real victory for me that night was when one of my teammates came up to me and said, "So, where exactly is your church? And what time are your Christmas Eve services?" Now, I don't know if that teammate will actually show up here on Christmas Eve, as they've suggested they might. But I got a real sense that my job had worked. I had prepared in the wilderness a way for them to follow. I had prepared in their hearts an opportunity, a particular method, a way for them to meet their God and for God to come meet them. It was a neat transaction. And I think that is the ministry that we are all called to today as we hear the words of the Baptist crying out in the wilderness. It is a ministry of presence. It is a ministry of invitation. And so my invitation to all of you is to go out into the wilderness places in your lives. Meet those people. Befriend those people. And prepare a highway for your God.